judgment day coming, a judgment day at the end of all time. Sometimes we get discouraged in life because we don't always see that judgment occur. Sometimes we begin to think, why doesn't God do what we think we ought to do? We talked about this in the adult class, where sometimes we impose upon God our own standard of judgment. We see things happen in the world and we say, well, that's bad. Someone ought to do something about that. And a lot of times, because we think we understand what they deserve, we feel like we now are justified in giving them what they deserve. Sometimes we feel like we're the ones to do the thing that punishes the person for doing what's wrong. And so we try to do that ourselves. And of course, when we take it into our own hands, often we get into trouble doing that. We call it vigilantism. There are agents that have been appointed to take care of that wrath that God would have upon the evil and the wicked. And sometimes we become frustrated because we don't see that wrath always being expressed. Sometimes we feel like the wicked getting away with what they're doing. The bad are doing bad things and no one cares. No one gives a concern at all. And sometimes we kind of irritated and frustrated because we feel like the system is not working. And sometimes we expand it beyond the system and say, well, God is not working. And so we tend to judge God. I kind of talked about this in the adult Bible class, where I think it really comes down to our knowledge of good and evil. We have very much... We have this sense of good and evil in our minds. It's so deeply embedded in us that we can't imagine living life without this knowledge of good and evil. We know what's right, we know what's wrong, and we feel like we need to let everyone else know what's right and what's wrong. That's how we see things. And so when we see something wrong, we feel like someone needs to be doing something about it. Someone needs to make it right somehow. That's how we view things. And if they won't do it, then we feel like we've got it. That's how we sometimes see things. We have a hard time understanding that. And so we have the problem of evil that exists in the world. This parable is a parallel, parable that matches another parable Jesus already taught. Many times the parables come in kind of couplets, where two parables come together and they seem to say the same thing. This parable is similar to the parable of the tares. Remember the story about the tares? Now that story, that the primary focus was on a farming act. A man sows seed, a good seed, and so forth, and the enemy comes while he's asleep and sows the bad seed. And no one can tell the difference because it all looks the same as it starts to grow up. You can't tell the difference. But then later on, as things mature, suddenly you can tell, hey, this is wheat. Hey, that's a weed. That shouldn't be that way. And And as they begin to see the difference, the servant said to the master, we've got to do something about this. Let's pull up the bad and get rid of it. And he says, no, you can't do that, because by doing so, you're going to destroy the good along the way. He shows a wisdom. He reflects the wisdom of God that sometimes we don't understand. Our solution is to say, if there's bad, get rid of the bad. Pull it out. We have no tolerance for the bad at all. But he says, no, we'll wait and let it go to the end. And at the end, then, there's going to be a harvest. That's what basically the sense of judgment. It'll be a harvest, and then we'll decide the good from the bad, and we'll work it out then. This story is somewhat similar to that, but instead of a farming setting, it's a fishing setting. Now, some of the people Jesus worked with were fishermen. So they were, that was their trade. Now, when we think fishing, we usually think of fishing one fish at a time with a fishing pole and a line. But that's not how they caught fish. They caught a whole lot of fish, usually with a big net. A big net that was weighted down in one part, so that when you threw it in the water, the one part would go down to the bottom, and the other part would be up, and they'd be in two boats, and they'd have this big net, and they'd throw it in the water, and they'd gradually bring the whole net to shore. They get on the shore, and then they pull the whole thing onto the shore, and what they're doing, they're catching all of the fish, and bring it all together at the end. Now, the basic message that says to us is that there's a time coming when everyone's going to be judged. We're not talking about fish, we're talking about people. Just like we weren't talking about wheat and we weren't talking about weeds, we're talking about people. Now, as we know in the Christian age, the basic nature of the wheat is to try to tell the weeds not to be weeds anymore, to convert them into being wheat again. That's kind of what we're looking for. And we like to think the same thing about the fish. Good fish should tell the bad fish, don't be bad fish, be a good fish. That's not part of our story here. We have all the fish that are there. Depending on what kind of fish you are, it's all brought in. And he's not really getting into types of fish. We're not talking about bass and trout. And we're talking about all the fish, wherever the kind of fish you go. And they decide when they look at the fish, this is a good one, we'll keep this. This is a bad one, we're going to throw it away. That's how they decide what the end is. At the end, Jesus says the fishermen are angels. And what they're going to do is they're going to find the bad ones are going to throw into a furnace. So we have this concept of fire destroying the evil that's going on. So there's judgment is coming. We have song, judgment day is coming, brother, get ready. You know, we sing songs like that. We talk about that God's going to judge us someday. Sometimes we get discouraged and think, well, no, God's not going to do that. God doesn't care. We put this concept of that God's kind of putting it off all the time. And we try to ignore what God says. But Jesus says, no, there's a day coming when God will judge. Now, the concept of judgment sometimes scares us. It very much frightens us. We don't quite know what's going on. Sometimes because when we judge ourselves, and that's what we probably ought to do more often than we do, most of the time we're judging others more than we're judging ourselves. That's our human problem. You know, with this knowledge of good and evil, James says, he who knows the good to do but doesn't do it sins. You know what's right. Do what's right. If you don't do what's right, something's wrong. I alluded to the Cain and Abel story where Cain offered sacrifice and God didn't show favor on it. And God then says to Cain, if you do what's right, your sacrifice will be accepted. Somehow he was doing something wrong. We may not understand exactly what he was doing wrong because it's not given to us completely in the story, but he was doing something wrong. God says, do what the right thing is and things will be different. So we have a right and a wrong. See, even in that story, sometimes we don't have an ability to understand. But God can tell the difference of what's going on. So sometimes we have a hard time comprehending what God is doing. And so we tend to say God doesn't know what God doesn't judge right. God doesn't take care. God doesn't make things right. So we try to impose upon God our own sense of judgment, and we judge God himself. Which is ridiculous. It's foolish. We don't realize who we're dealing with. We don't realize what we're talking about. We don't understand what God's all about. But there is a time coming when God will judge. And if you've been a good fish, God will take care of you. And if you've been a bad fish, God will destroy you. That's kind of what the message is. Well, how do you know the good from the bad? Listen to God. God has not been silent. God has spoken. God is talking quite a bit. Now, why doesn't God speak today? Well, God has already spoken all he's going to say. Didn't he say any more? You know, I remember my grandmother saying to my sister, why don't you do what God told you? Well, if he told me to do it, do it. Well, God's already told you. Read the Bible. Hear what God has to say. The message of Jesus reflects the heart of God. That's what's so important. That's why we need to read the words of Jesus, because it teaches something about who God and what God expects of us. When it comes to judgment, there's only two questions, as I said in scriptures, there's only two questions that really matter. From Revelation, we read the judgment scene where the big question is, are you written in the book of life? What's the book of life? Well, it's some kind of record that, you know, did you believe on Jesus? That's really comes down to it. Are you a believer of Jesus? Do you follow Jesus all about? That's the first question. Yes or no? Second question, this comes from Matthew chapter 25 passage, when Jesus talks about sheep and goats, kind of all together, and Jesus basically says, what you did to me or what you didn't do to me matters. What are you talking about? Well, when you did to the least of these, you did to me. Did you help others when they needed help? When you saw someone eating food, did you give them food? When they were thirsty, did you give them something to drink? When they were naked, did you put clothes on? When they were in prison, did you come visit? On and on he goes with how you should show Christian behavior to other people. What you do to other people matters to God. Or put in other words, love your neighbor as yourself. I mean, that's what Jesus says. This is my new command. It's not really new. It's kind of a basic command. But what does God expect of us? God expects us to treat others like God has treated us. Do unto others, love one another as I have loved you. Now, we have a hard time with that because we like to love ourselves. We like to love the ones, our favorite ones. But the others, if we don't want to love, don't pay attention to them. And we have no problem with, you know, cast them out. Throw them down the pit. You know, let them burn up. We don't care about that. Well, God cares about all of them. So understanding who God is a big part of our problem. What kind of God is God? What kind of God, what's he doing? What you not talking about? Well, God is the only one who is qualified to judge. trouble is, we often think we know how to judge better than God knows how to judge. We know people deserve, we know people how to get, and so we want to give them what they should deserve, and that's what we want to do all the time. And that's why we get in all kinds of problems, because we're not very good judges. If you want to be honest in the matter, we're not very good judges. In fact, I like to say we're unjust judges at best. We don't judge by all the things that you need to judge. Well, what do you consider when you judge? Well, you got to consider what they did. You got to consider why they did it. You got to consider the circumstances going around. What's going on? What led you to do this? Why did you do this thing? There's some things we say, well, that makes a difference. Oh, that's all right then. We can justify some things because they say, well, I understand because what he did made you do that. That's how we think with our own minds. God's able to put all that together himself. He's able to figure out, and he'd say, okay, here's what it's really all about. Here's your judgment. I've been asked a couple times in the course of my life by parents whose children have died in various ways. They've asked me, what's God doing with my son? They're wanting to judge God. Is God going to treat my child fairly is what they're asking. And it's a question they have because it troubles them. My son died in this particular way, and my son is now in God's hands. What's God doing with my son? Well, the correct answer is it's none of your business. It's God's business. It's in God's hands. God knows what he's doing. But my answer usually isn't that. My answer is, well, I don't know exactly what God's doing with your son because I don't know the whole thing about your son's life. I don't know how many times he heard the gospel and rejected it. I don't know how many times he embraced the gospel. I don't know what kind of a life he lived. I don't know because I can't judge your son. But I do know this about God. And I can share with them what God is. What kind of God is God? He's a loving, merciful, kind God. He will take into consideration all your son's life, the good and the bad, and he'll weigh it carefully and he'll treat your son fairly. That's what I say to these parents who are in grief talking about what God, because they're asking the question because they're looking to judge God. Is God going to treat my son fairly? If he doesn't, then I'm not going to believe in God. They're going to punish God by not believing in him. You don't punish God. You can't punish God. But sometimes we think we're going to make God feel sorry because he did what we wanted to do. You're not in charge. You're not running the whole show here. You're not the one in making these decisions. God is. The whole point I'm getting at is that God can be trusted to do the right thing. You've got to understand the character of God. What kind of God is God? What kind of person is he? To me, it really makes a big difference to spend some time in Exodus 34 when Moses says, let me see you, God. God says, I can't show you myself. If you saw me, it would kill you. But God says, here's my compromise. I'll let you hide in the cave, and I'll cover the cave up, and I'll pass in front of you, and I'll remove the covering just so you can see the backside of me, and then you can see a little bit of what I'm really all about. So as God does that, God can't do it quietly. God's got to say something about himself. So you have this revelation about God. The question, what kind of God is God, is answered in that passage. And God describes himself as merciful, kind, compassionate, gracious, slow to anger, forgiving, all sorts of things he describes. And by the way, at the very end, he says, oh yeah, and I also deal with people who sin. I will punish the sinner. I'll destroy the sinner. We always want to reverse that. We want to say the first thing about God is God punishes the sin. God is a just God. God's an angry God. Don't cross God. That's the first thing we think. We've got it backwards. The first thing God says about himself is, I'm gracious, I'm compassionate, I'm kind, I'm merciful, I'm slow to anger, I'm forgiving. That's the kind of person I am. And because I am that way, when I do judge and punish the evildoer, you've got to know that he's pushed it to the limit. When God decides you're a bad fish, that means you've been a bad fish all your life. You won't change your bad fishery. All right, whatever that is, you won't change what you are. All right, now whether it's good for a big fish to eat a little fish, I don't know. That's none of my business. I'm not into that. That's the nature of fish. But when I don't know the laws of fish, how to live a fish, I can't begin to do it. But I know how God shows us how we live our lives. And the way we should live our lives is to show to our neighbors the love God has shown to us. So when Jesus says, if your neighbor is hurting, you do something about it. What made the Good Samaritan good? You can figure this out, right? He saw someone in need and happened to be his enemy. He stopped and helped him anyway. It's incredible. Why would he do that? That doesn't make any sense. You would walk away. You'd spit on your enemy. You kick him and you go by. You say, well, look, you die. You deserve to die. That's what you would think. But he doesn't do that. You need help? Let me help you. That's what made the Good Samaritan so good. On the other hand, in the same story, you have a priest who, if anyone should have compassion on his own people, would be a priest. Oh, he walks on by. You have a Levite, a little bit less than a priest, but still a servant of God in a special sort of way. And again, someone who should show compassion and service to his own people would be a Levite. He walks on by. We don't even have just a regular Jew in the story because we jump all the way then to a Samaritan, a person that all the Jews hated and despised. And they said they were worse, they were valued less than the spittle that drips from the beard. That's how they described it. They literally described the spittle on your beard. That's what they described as a Samaritan. They just thought they were no worth at all. And here, of all people, a Samaritan stops and helps the guy. At the end, Jesus says, who then showed mercy? Who then, rather, was a good neighbor? The question is, who's my neighbor? Who was the neighbor to the man? They can't say the Samaritan. They can only say, the one who showed mercy. Well, very good. That's right. That's what made him good, because he did what God expected him to do, what God expects you to do. And the day of judgment comes down to, what kind of fish were you? Well, did you believe on Jesus? And because you believed on Jesus, did you treat other people differently than you would have treated them? That's what judgment is really all about. Judgment day is coming. What's it all about? Well, it really doesn't matter how much you memorize the scripture. I mean, it's good to memorize, good to know these facts, but that's not what matters. It's good to know you got to church. You went to church a few times. Well, that's good too. That's not going to matter. It's good to know how many people you talked to Jesus about. That's good too, but it doesn't matter. How'd you treat people when you were around them? How'd you treat other people? That's what matters to God. And did you believe it was based on your belief in Jesus? That's what judgment is all about. So how times we sometimes have a hard time believing this, because sometimes we have a hard time believing that there is a God. We're still living in a world that says, well, there's no God. Twice in Psalms, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. The definition of foolishness is unbelief in God. Reverse that, the definition of wisdom is believing in God. Wisdom doesn't mean that you're a super genius. It doesn't mean you're super smart. It doesn't mean you've got things figured out. It doesn't mean you're more practical. I mean, we sometimes say, no, it means you simply believe in God. And because you believe in God, then it changes the way you view people, the way you treat people, the way you behave to people. Now, there is evil in the world. There's all kinds of evil. Sometimes we have a hard time with that. Some of the characters in the Bible had a hard time dealing with that. I've got a couple passages. I'll let me read to you a couple of them. From the book of Job, chapter 21, Job says, when I think about this, I'm terrified. Trembling seizes my body. Why do the wicked live on, grow old, and increase in power? Job says, that shouldn't be. That shouldn't, if they're wicked, they should die young because they're wicked. Why do they? And then he says, their homes are safe and free from fear, and the rod of God is not upon them. That bothers me. That was Job. He was one of the greatest men, according to God, that lived. When God measured men, God said to Satan, what about my man Job? God is kind of proud of Job. He's a good guy. And that's what Job has. Why doesn't God do his God thing? That's what Job says. You go to Psalm 73, one of the greatest Psalms written by a I don't know who he was in Israel. He wasn't David, he wasn't Solomon. But here's what he wrote, it's Asaph. He wrote this in Psalm 73. As for me and my feet had almost slipped. I nearly lost my foothold, for I envied the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. He said, I almost lost it all when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. He then goes further. Surely in vain I've kept my heart pure. In vain I've washed my hands in innocence. It's not worth it being good. That's what he says. It's not worth it. All day long I've been plagued. I've been punished every morning. What's going on? What's the sense of it all? Have you ever been there? Have you ever felt that way? Sure you have. What's the point of following? What's the point of serving God when it seems like the bad get all the good things and the good guys die young? It doesn't make sense at all. What's the point of it all? Asaph would eventually realize, I finally changed my mind when I realized that God's going to judge him in the end. You know this thing about the fish, you all bring good fish, bad fish? God knows what he's doing. That's what Asaph finally concluded. God knows the answer. God has the final answer to evil. When we discussed in the adult Bible class, why doesn't God do something about the evil? Well, there's a reason why God doesn't do that. It's because of the character of God. What kind of God is God? I've already suggested this. What kind of God is God? He's patient. He's merciful. He's kind. He's also patient, merciful, and kind to even the bad guys as well as the good guys. God will bless you if you're good. Sure. God will bless you if you're evil too. Huh? What are you talking about? God will bless you with his kindness, waiting for you, waiting for the kindness of God to cause you to repent. God's kindness should cause you to repent. Ooh, you hurt my brain. This concept here is kind of putting pressure on here. Something's going to explode. How is it possible for God to make me repent by his being kind to me? It doesn't make any sense at all. You don't understand the wisdom of God. God's wisdom is so far beyond us. We think we've got God figured out. We haven't got a clue to what God is all about. That's why you have to trust in the Lord with all your heart. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 5. Trust with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding. When you lean on your own understanding, you think, well, I've got it all figured out. I know it's what I got. I know all the answers. No, you don't. You don't know anything at all. Somebody's horn is going, I know. We've got to let someone else do that. It's not our problem right now. We've got other things to worry about, okay? Our thing is trying to understand God. And God knows what's going on. God knows what's happening. And sometimes it's discouraging because life doesn't seem to be good for us. One of the problems about life is that people don't always believe in God. And not only do they not believe in God, they get angry when we do believe in God. And there's a thing Jesus talked about that's going to happen when you believe in God. People will hate you because they hated me. People will persecute you. And sometimes that persecution will bring about not only your pain and suffering, sometimes it will bring about your death as well. Some people will die because they believe in God. Kind of hard to believe that. Kind of hard to understand that. I was listening to this today, a report about how many Christians in Nigeria by the thousands have been killed by unbelievers. Nigeria was the one great spot in Africa where people were amazingly coming to Christ. All kinds of coming. They had gigantic populations of Christians in Nigeria. Now, by Christian, I'm talking about how you define Christianity. Well, I'm talking about just simple, basic faith in Jesus. Try to live for Jesus. That's what I'm talking about. I don't know what denominational stripe you want to worry about. I'm not worried about that. They were Christians. And unbelievers are killing them because they're Christians. We live in a world today that's kind of gotten crazy about hating the Jews because they're Jews. Why? I don't know. I don't understand. Do they deserve it? I have no idea. I can't comprehend it. I don't know that many Jews, so I can't really describe all the Jews. But people hate them just because they're Jews. That doesn't make any sense. Well, there are more people who have killed and hated Christians than those who hate Jews. It's an even bigger problem for us. So there's a real challenge to you if you're going to be a Christian, if you're going to be a good fish, you're likely to be killed by others. That's the risk of following God. Jesus says it's worth it. Why is it worth it? Because beyond this life is another life. And that's the life that counts. Sometimes we forget that when we experience a death. And I'm not trying to make fun of those, because grief is real. I've experienced grief. I understand what it's like. Oh, we missed the ones we knew. We missed the ones we loved. But need remember, there's something more than this life. Something more important than this life. It's the next life. This life is nothing more than a preparation for the next life. It's the next life that matters. So when someone dies, the only question you need to be asking about the person who died is, well, were they a believer? Did they believe in God? Were they a good fish or a bad fish, to borrow from our passage? You know, were they a weed or were they a piece of wheat? You know, borrowing from the... What's going on? What kind of person were they? And so when we have a funeral, often we're kind of measuring the life that lived before us. We tell about the kind of person they were, how the effect they had on us. You remember how that story in the book of Acts, where Peter is dealing with the death of I think his name was Dorcas or Tabitha. And all the women come and they showed the things that Tabitha made for them. Here's what she made for, here's gifts, here's how she blessed my life. Here's my memory. There's nothing wrong with having memories about the person who's died. It's a valuable, meaningful way of dealing with that death. But their death is nothing more than a springboard into the next one. What matters is the next one. When Jesus told the story of the rich man and Lazarus, he's telling us something about the next life. It's a story that kind of scares us, because who wants to wake up in Hades and thirsty, you know, and regretful? Oh, I shouldn't have. And then, what about my brothers? He's worried about it. Well, good thing you're worried about him now. Lazarus over there in the bosom of Abraham. Now, of course, it's going on, but he thinks he's in comfort. He wasn't suffering. He's got a better life now. When we try to comfort someone saying, well, they're in a better place, people make fun of us, but it's true. If they're a believer in Christ, it's true. It's a better place. God knows what he's doing. Now, sometimes when you're in grief, you don't want to hear those kind of stories, because you're full of your grief, and all you want to do is feel your grief. But there's more than just that going on. Take comfort in God. I sometimes would counsel people at a funeral. I said, don't be like Jacob. You remember the story of Jacob when his sons sold Joseph, and they took his coat and dipped it in blood, and took it to his father and says, hey, we found this. Do you recognize this? I mean, kind of a stupid thing of saying, he knows what it is. It's got blood. What's he supposed to think? Some animal killed his son. That's what he thinks. He's grieving for his son, Joseph. His sons and his daughters rose up to comfort him, and the scripture says, Jacob would not be comforted. I don't know if he knew anything about it, but he would not be. I often tell people, don't be like Jacob. Don't refuse the comfort God gives to you. Comfort's very important. Comfort's an important thing. Rejoice in the comfort God gives you. But there's more to this life than the comfort over the loss of death. There's a next life. And we take a great deal of comfort in knowing that God knows what he's doing and God has a place. Jesus says, I have a place prepared for you. That's what Jesus says in John 14. He wasn't just talking to the apostles, he's talking to all of us. There's a big place. Heaven's got a big place, and God has a place reserved just for you. Isn't that a wonderful thing? That's wonderful to know that God cares about you. He's got a place prepared for you, so that when you die, you've got a place for him. That's what he's got for them. What a wonderful God our God is. But so much time, we've got so wrapped up in ourselves, all we can think about is what we would do if we were God. Of course, we don't know what God is, because we can't even begin to, but we sometimes play that game. God knows what he's doing. God knows how to handle evil. God knows how to handle good. And we have to live our life believing that God will take care of everything. Even if in this life it doesn't look like it makes sense to us. There's some songs I listen to when I come here. One of the songs is The Eye of the Storm, which describes a terrible consequences of life. You know, he talks about how my friends and my family, you know, gone under me, you quit on me, and disease takes my child, and I can't do a thing about it. I'm losing all my force, everything I cared about. I mean, everything in description, I'm like, life is lousy. Life is rotten. I'm going down the tubes. But God is in the eye of the storm. God is there, even though my sail is torn. God is in control. I like that song because sometimes I feel like that too. I feel like, oh, it's all going crazy. But God knows what he's doing. In 1968, I got married to my wife. In 1969, we had our first child, a daughter. 1969 was a terrible time to have a child because it looked like the world's coming to an end. It looked like people were going crazy. Nothing made sense. People were even asking me, people who are my friends, why did you get married, you dummy? No one gets married anymore. You just live with someone. You don't get married to be. What? Don't you? Why? I'm saying, I still believe in God. I still believe in the fathers. I believe in marriage. I believe in what we've always understood. I don't give up on God, even though it looks like my world is falling apart. It looks like everything that we believed in is given. The new morality. Remember that? The new morality. We don't do things like we do. We do things new. That's not new morality at all. It's an old morality. That's all it is. It was a crazy time in the world. It looked like the world's coming to. Well, we lived through it. Things got better eventually. And there have been times since then like that, where sometimes we think, oh, no, it's all coming in. God knows what he's doing. God's in control. God's in charge. You can count. You can trust God. That's my point. Simple message of the message. God is trustworthy. You can count on him, and God will judge right. Good fish, bad fish. He knows the good fish from the bad fish. Commit yourself to being a good fish. To borrow our story, be a good fish all your life, and you'll be blessed. Be a bad fish, and there's nothing but a furnace, a fire for you. How can a loving God do that? Well, you push God beyond his mercy, and that's why there is a hell. It's hard to understand why there can be possibly a hell. There is a hell. But it's only for those who will not believe in God, will not follow God, will not trust God, will not obey God. I get so caught up in my sermon sometimes, I forget what we did. And I remember this song. It's a, what's it?
52.
It's
when the roll's called up yonder.
Yeah, there's going to be a roll called up yonder, right? When the roll's called up yonder, you know, are you in the book of life? You know, yes, I'm in the book. Did you treat your name? Yeah, when the roll's called up yonder, I'll be there. That's be a good fish. That's what the song's all about. That's right.